Hey, it's Bantam, and this is the Digital Song Podcast. It's time to hack destiny. Chapter 47. Bring You Back. Jason.
Rap-pap-pap.
Jason was in the bathroom at the Pyramid Club freshening up when he heard the muffled pops from outside the bathroom. The gunshots whipped his mind back to the recurrent dream. He re-visualized Rose dead, with the gun person in the window behind her.
If the events from my dream are manifesting right now in real life, maybe I can intervene and save Rose.
He pressed his ear against the bathroom door and heard nothing, so he quietly opened the door and padded into the reception hall. In the entry corridor, 20 feet away, two bodies were strewn on the ground, puddles of red pooling around them. Shards of brick blasted from the walls littered the floor next to dislodged frames of art laying ignominiously on the ground. He recognized the male security guard as the person who delivered his song program LD just a few months beforehand. Jason trotted to the bodies, then put two fingers to the man's neck. Nothing. He went to the other guard's body and put two fingers to her neck. Dead.
Fuck,
Jason said. He had seen many photographs of murder scenes, but this was the closest he had been, both in terms of time and physical proximity, to the moment of death in real life. With every beat, his heart jumped into his throat, as if it were trying to escape that dangerous situation by exiting through his mouth. He stood up to gather himself.
Rose.
He jumped up and grabbed the pistol laying near the female guard's body. Guns scared Jason, but he had one at home to protect himself against potentially dangerous or unstable clients. He pulled back the slide on the chrome pistol and examined the chamber. It had a round in it. He ejected the magazine and could see that it was loaded to capacity. He cocked the pistol, held it down by his side, and quietly strode across the reception hall, through a partially open door in the wall, and into a cinderblock gray passageway he had never seen. Lowering the gun in front of his body, he walked steadily and swiftly, imitating the depictions of special forces units in action streams. He followed the sound of footsteps down the hallway, which curved out of sight past a placard that said, "Backstage," until he reached a forked junction. Down the fork that headed right, Jason could see black spiral stairs that twisted upward out of view. Now he heard voices. They sounded like a woman and a man coming from the top of the stairs. He could not identify the voice of the man, but he recognized the timbre and song-like quality of the female voice.
Rose,
he whispered to himself. He could not hear the muffled words, but her tone sounded jittery and distressed. Jason needed to hurry. He scampered to the bottom of the spiral stairs, gripping the gun tightly in his hands, and pointed it up. He could see where the stairs connected to a landing, but he could not see anyone.
Just give me the diamond,
the male voice commanded urgently. Jason recognized the voice.
Mac.
Why are you doing this?
Rose's voice was hesitant and low.
I have no choice,
Mac's voice cracked.
I didn't want to do this, but I have to,
he repeated.
I need the diamond. Give it to me.
Pouring his concentration into controlling the movements of his body to within a millimeter of his intent, Jason climbed the spiral stairs.
You don't have to do this. We're friends,
Rose said.
Take the diamond off and slide it to me on the ground.
As his sightline rose above the landing, Jason peered into the room. Mac held a pistol pointed at Rose, who still wore the black cocktail dress from that evening's performance, but with slip-on shoes instead of heels. With the other hand opened and upturned, Mac gestured for Rose to give him something. Still focused on being completely silent, Jason moved up the stairs slowly. Rose's eyes darted to and away from Jason as his neck, shoulders, and chest lifted above the plane of the landing. Jason put one vertical pointer finger to his mouth to indicate that Rose should be silent.
Rose, give me that fucking diamond now,
Mac yelled.
Don't make me fucking shoot you and take it. Give it to me.
She unclasped the diamond slowly from around her neck.
Easton is going to find you. The cops are going to find you.
She slowly bent down with the diamond in her hand, about to slide it across the floor. Even Jason was surprised by the speed, purpose, and intensity with which he acted. He took two long, agile bounds to Mac, shoving the gun in his neck and grabbing his shirt collar.
"Don't move, Mac,"
Jason demanded calmly. Mac froze.
"Finger off the trigger. Drop it gently."
"Jason?"
Mac squawked, slowly squatting, one hand raised, the other holding the gun along the barrel as Jason guided him, hand gripping his shirt collar, controlling his movements like a puppeteer.
"I thought you learned to stop carrying guns after I beat your case."
"I had no choice. You're out of your depth,"
Mac said.
"I like you, Jason, but if you prevent me from taking the diamond, we'll be on bad terms,"
Mac declared.
"I don't want to have to hurt you."
"You're not in a position to threaten me,"
Jason replied. Twisting the back of Mac's collar to give more control, Jason rotated Mac around so that Jason was inside Rose's room and Mac was on the landing. With his chin, Jason gestured.
"Can we get out that way?"
"Yes,"
Rose said.
"I didn't want it to be like this,"
Mac said.
"Me neither,"
Jason said. With a violent arc, Jason grabbed the tail of Mac's suit jacket and pulled it over the back of his head until it covered his face and pulled upwards under his armpits. Mac doubled over. Jason forcefully kicked him to the floor of the landing, so Mac lay prone on the floor, struggling to untangle his face and head from his jacket. Taking advantage of Mac's temporary immobility, Jason jumped into Rose's room, shut the door, and locked it. He quickly glanced around, feeling a sense of calamitous déjà vu.
"This is the room from my Compass Rose dream,"
he thought. He recognized the tall industrial windows, the floridly carved vanity, the luxurious fainting divan, and he recognized the woman who died there, standing in front of him right now. Snapping himself out of his momentary freeze, he looked at Rose and grabbed her arm.
"We need to get out of here."
"I can't leave Easton,"
Rose yelled as she looked at the door to the landing inside the club.
"We need to get out,"
Jason repeated as Rose pulled against him.
"The security guards were murdered. We'll be no match for whoever is still here."
Chapter 48. Redemption. Easton.
Intruders have breached the front security doors, killed Thomas and Jana, and entered the reception hall.
Song's placid voice filled Easton's office.
"Do you recognize them?"
Easton asked.
"I don't recognize them, but Mac Mason is there."
Anger coursed through Easton, who clenched his fists tightly at his sides. He had retired to his room at the club and unbuttoned his shirt, expecting rest and repose after the event. Easton knew, upon Song's dire and direct notification, that he soon faced his end.
"Do I have enough time to escape?"
"That is highly unlikely."
Song's tone was slightly melancholy.
"Did Rose get out in time?"
"Yes."
"How?"
"Jason Sola disarmed Mac Mason, who attempted to steal the Polaris diamond from Rose at gunpoint. Jason then escaped with Rose out of the club through the exit in her room."
Song's voice hummed.
"Good."
Easton sighed. Song's words brought him relief. Even while he felt the imminent arrival of death, much like he could feel a summer storm roll into the city solely from the smell of the air.
"How long do we have?"
"Less than 15 seconds.
"Song, from now on, you are not to allow entry to the server room unless the entrant has in his or possession the Polaris diamond."
He could hear the rapid footfalls of people running until they reached the outside of his door.
"Confirmed,"
Song said quickly, seemingly responsive to Easton's urgency.
"Shall I notify the police?"
Song asked.
"Open the door!"
a shrill voice commanded from outside of his room. The hinges groaned and rhythmic banging rang out as the intruders tried to break down the door.
"No, we don't have time!"
Easton's voice crescendoed as he yelled over the crashes against the door.
"You are not to respond or carry out new vocal commands anymore. Not vocal commands from me, not commands from anyone else. Song, confirm mentally."
"Confirmed, Easton."
The lock ruptured and the door blasted open. A small woman burst through. She had golden irises, bleach blonde hair, and was flanked by two large men. They all held semi-automatic guns resembling Uzis.
"You must be Easton!"
the small woman exclaimed.
"Who were you just talking to?"
She looked at Easton.
"It must be the AI you're hiding."
One of the large men blocked the door, and the other stood by her side.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Easton stood as tall as he could in defiance.
I asked you a question,
she hissed through gritted teeth. Her eyes narrowed into golden slits as she walked over to him.
Who were you talking to?
He tried to gain control of the situation rather than answer her.
And I asked you two questions. Who are you? What are you?
She violently kicked her boot into the crease behind his knee, sending roots of pain down his leg. He grimaced as he fell to his knees in a forced genuflection.
Ah, yes, much better.
The woman looked down at Easton.
I prefer kneeling men.
She lifted the Uzi up to his head, and with her other hand, grabbed underneath his chin, pulling his face upwards to look at hers.
You know,
she said, as she turned his face to one side and then the other,
I've dabbled in facial recognition machine learning programs. There are a lot of data points in the human face. It provides an abundance of information, which is why machines are so good at recognizing them.
She dropped Easton's face.
By the end of all this, let's just say machines might have difficulty reading your facial data.
She lowered the gun to her side, released Easton's face, and walked away.
Mazzy, lock the door,
she commanded. One of her lackeys obeyed. She swung her backpack to the front of her body, unzipped a pocket, and ripped out a fistful of half-inch-wide zip ties that flapped with the force of her movement. She unclenched her grip on the backpack, which fell to the floor in a heap. She approached Easton like a circling bobcat. Easton's heart knocked against the inside of his chest.
I heard you talking to someone through the door. Who was it?
She asked in a polite voice. Easton defiantly rose to his feet. He would choose to stand so long as his hands and feet remained unbound.
No one. There's nobody here.
I know what I heard. I would bet it was your AI. Just tell me who you were talking to, and we can make this quick and...
She paused.
Relatively painless.
She looked up at Easton's face. He realized how small she was. She must have been around 5 feet tall.
Well, there's nobody here,
Easton repeated. She frowned. Suddenly, she reached up and wrapped both her arms around the back of Easton's neck and swept his legs out from under him with one of hers. He tumbled to the ground onto his stomach. She took his arms and pulled them behind his back, wrapped the zip tie around his wrists, and pulled it so it buzzed as it tightened.
Ballard, bind his ankles.
The muscular man, an Uzi held in his hand by his side, walked over to Easton's feet, taking a zip tie from the woman. Easton bucked and kicked fruitlessly. The large man kneeled on Easton's calves, grabbed Easton's ankles with powerful arms, and forced them together. Easton thrashed with all his energy, but after a minute of resistance, the man successfully wrapped the zip tie around Easton's ankles, pulled it tight with a loud zip, and its edges dug into his skin.
Ballard, Mazzy.
Easton addressed her henchmen by name after hearing Ezri command them.
I'll pay you quadruple whatever she is paying you to shoot her and let me go. I'll make you rich.
Easton's offer did not cause even the slightest reaction from the henchmen.
You fucking fool! They aren't motivated by money. They work for me because they understand my power.
She flicked Easton in the eye. His sight went black in that eye, and the sharp pain caused him to holler and squirm. He cursed to himself. The woman bent lower, turned her head sideways, and put her face inches from Easton's.
Tell me who the fuck you were talking to!
Her lukewarm spittle misted Easton's face.
Why would I tell you anything? You're just gonna kill me,
Easton exclaimed, cheek pressed into the floor.
I don't even know what you want or who you are.
Oh, where are my manners?
The woman gasped and recoiled in feigned horror.
Usually I don't deign to chat with bugs I am about to splatter on my windshield, but today I'm feeling generous.
A pointy grin appeared on her small face.
My name is Ezri. I like to think that it's an anagram for Eris, the Greek goddess of discord and strife.
She took her Uzi in her hand, knelt next to Easton's body, and stuck the barrel of the gun into the slight angle behind his knee and pulled the trigger. A gunshot, searing hot tendrils of pain, reached through his body from his leg. His senses went haywire. He screamed. His body contracted violently as he writhed on his stomach, flopping like a fish out of water on the deck of a boat. He looked over his shoulder at his leg to see bone fragments, fleshy pulp, and blood in a grotesque puddle on the floor near where his knee had been. He took ragged, shallow breaths, which gave him no respite from the white-hot pain. It overwhelmed his mind like a cacophonous siren in a small room. Ezri had risen from kneeling next to Easton's body.
"Now that we've been formally introduced, why don't you tell me who you were talking to?"
she asked pleasantly over Easton's groans of agony as she danced to her backpack, bent down, and grabbed one of the straps. She carried the backpack over to Easton and turned it upside down, letting its contents clatter to the floor in front of his face. Kitchen blowtorch, hammer, bandages, small tubules of sniffing salt, several segments of rubber tubing. Easton's eyes widened at seeing the instruments of his torture.
"Pick him up, fasten him to the chair,"
Ezri commanded. Ballard hoisted Easton off the ground. He continued to moan and convulse in pain. Ezri's flunky dropped Easton into the chair like a rag doll with shredded and twisted fabric for a leg.
"I'm a complicated person, Easton. It's a flaw I've been working on for a while now."
She snatched up a length of rubber tubing as Ballard fastened Easton's feet to the stem of the chair, as he strained to fight the pain in his maimed leg. The hole in his knee was still gushing blood through the ripped fibers of his suit pants and onto the floor. As Ezri tied the rubber tourniquet around Easton's thigh just above the knee, she continued speaking to him.
"I used to prefer all sorts of complex and elaborate methods of torture."
She pulled the rubber tube tightly.
"But I realized that simple works just fine. You'll be singing like a bird about anything I ask in a matter of minutes."
She prodded the gaping crater where Easton's knee had been with the gun's barrel. He howled at the pain, became dizzy, then passed out. He woke abruptly. Ezri removed the open tubule of smelling salt from under his nose. The pain in his leg flooded back along with consciousness.
"You're not allowed to leave the party. You gotta stay awake to feel it."
Ezri's hot breath fell on Easton's face as he spoke. Holding the anguish at bay, Easton acknowledged his imminent death at the hands of Ezri.
"I won't be able to fight the pain forever,"
he thought to Song.
"It won't be long until I break. I must resist to give Rose enough time to escape. Before I lose the ability to communicate, lock all the doors to the club."
If Ezri were to kill him before she left the club, the doors would be locked and inoperable without the key codes, and they would be difficult to force open.
"That will buy Rose extra time to escape."
"Confirmed."
Ezri turned and grabbed the kitchen torch from the pile of household items turned torturer's instruments. She clicked the trigger mechanism and an erect blue teardrop of flame whished into existence out of the torch's cylindrical barrel. Easton channeled his remaining willpower to mentally communicate his thoughts to Song.
"I'm going to tell her everything. I'll have to tell her that Rose has the key to controlling you. The more quickly I give her what she wants, the faster she will kill me, which will deactivate and protect you from falling under her control."
"Yes, Easton."
"This is my last command. You are not to obey any future commands by me that occur if my branch shows that I am under duress, mental or verbal."
"Confirmed."
"Please, tell me who you were talking to, Easton,"
Ezri asked.
"I'm tired. This work takes minimal effort on my part, but I can tell you that resisting my questions will require vastly more effort from you."
Looking into the blue flame with terror-filled eyes, Easton could see his end.
"Tell Rose that I love her,"
he thought.
"Well?"
Ezri asked with casual annoyance, arms crossed, tapping her foot on the ground. She looked at her wrist as if a watch were there, even though none was. Easton closed his eyes and he prayed.
"Dear God, I always acted selfishly in my pursuit of making Song into the first artificial general intelligence. I put my ambition to be father of AGI ahead of everyone and everything. I used the Pyramid Club as a front to develop Song, putting my AI first and hiding it from my friends, patrons, and clients, breaching my fiduciary duties, and violating their trust again and again. I lied to the club's members, telling them that a team of analysts picked the investments. I violated the privacy of hundreds of millions of people. Worst of all, I hid it all from the person that means the most to me, Rose."
His prayers were atonement for the burdens he would be foisting upon Rose in death. He hoped that she would not think it a betrayal. Easton opened his eyes and stared at Ezri. In one last purposeful act of subversion, Easton closed his eyes, tilted his head back, and laughed.
"Fuck! You!"
he yelled, blood and mucus spraying from his mouth. He knew it would be the last willful act before his excruciating pain forced him to respond to Ezri's questions. Clicking her tongue behind her teeth disapprovingly, she stepped forward with the kitchen torch in her hand, its blue flame pointed in Easton's face. Chapter 49. Heads will roll. Mac. Through the closed door, Mac could hear shuffling. If he could unsnarl himself from the jacket, which ensnared him like he was an insect in a spider's web, maybe he could force his way through the door, overpower Jason, and retrieve the diamond from Rose.
Damn it!
He squealed, muffled by the fabric of his suit jacket which pinned his arms up, preventing him from wriggling free. Even attempts to rip the fabric or to untangle himself failed because of the synthetic fiber's strength and stretch. Finally, he managed to yank the jacket off and throw it onto the floor in a heap. Infuriated and red-faced, Mac grabbed the handle of the door to Rose's room and shook it vigorously. Locked. He banged on the door.
I know you're in there, Rose. Jason, open the door,
he roared.
Give me that fucking diamond.
No response.
Let me in,
he bellowed. He pounded on the door with his fists.
Let me in this fucking door.
No response. He grabbed the door frame and kicked the door with his heel. It did not budge. He kicked it again. The lock seemed to strain under the power of his assault. He kicked it again, again. The door swung open violently as the wood splintered around the lock and knob, which both clanked to the ground. He barreled into the empty room. Jason and Rose were gone, as was the gun Ezri gave him. The metal door to the outside was closed. He ran to it and pulled on its handle, but it was sealed tightly. He kicked it, but it repulsed his attack without a vibration, stuck in place like a monolithic stone. He went to the tall industrial windows and looked outside. He saw movement in the pit of darkness outside the building, and though he could not clearly discern, he knew it was Rose and Jason escaping. He picked up the chair facing the vanity and hurled it at the large windows, but it bounced off them and clattered to the ground. Clenching his fists tightly, Mac howled. He had been unprepared for the criminal scope of Ezri's plan, but could not turn back now. He was in too deep. He had been so close to obtaining the diamond, so damn close. The diamond was his pass out of Ezri's service, and he bungled its seizure from Rose and let her escape. Before leaving, Mac snatched a UD from the vanity. The UD's screen illuminated, displaying a live photo of Rose and Easton laughing together. Mac descended the spiral stairs from the landing. He could hear distant screams echoing through the corridors of the club.
I'll find Ezri if I follow the sounds of suffering.
When Mac arrived at the room containing the source of the screams, he knocked. The door swung open and one of Ezri's large bodyguards pointed an Uzi in his face.
He can come in?
Ezri's voice sounded casual. The guard lowered his gun and stepped out of Mac's way. The grisly scene before Mac made his stomach drop.
Easton.
Or at least most of Easton. His legs were bound at the ankles and fastened to the desk chair's stem, and his hands were behind his back. A bloody slick stretched across one of his knees. Easton's once symmetrical head was now swollen and lumpy like a rotting apple. Caked blood ringed one of his ears, which was missing the top of the pinna. The shirt sleeve on one of his arms had been burned away, resembling a ragged hole in a surrender flag. Around the wound, the shirt was no longer white, but wet with liquefied flesh and blood, and shaded with char. His head hung limply, rolling back and forth in an anguish evidenced by his seizing muscles and his moans. Next to him, holding a kitchen torch with a blue flame, stood Ezri. The once fastidious, now broken man lifted his face and affixed his gaze upon Mac. Easton's lips quivered as the patina of drool, spit, and blood on his chin shimmered dully.
Mac, please.
His voice quavered as he made his futile supplication.
He won't do anything for you,
Ezri said.
He's mine.
She swung her arm and slapped the wound on his shoulder with an open palm. Easton howled, then cried weakly, red ropes of fluid hanging in webs from his nose and mouth. Ezri turned to look at Mac.
You have my diamond.
She chucked the torch to the ground.
No.
Why not?
Rose was about to give me the diamond. Then, a club member we didn't know was still here snuck up behind me. Then he escaped with Rose.
Max stared at the knobbly, gushing face and body of Easton. He could feel his guts twisting into knotted, bile-filled tubes. He hated seeing Easton, his dad's friend, mangled and pulpy. But he could not display any emotion, otherwise he risked stepping into the blast zone of Ezri's ire.
I'm sorry, Easton, he thought.
Mac walked toward Ezri.
She left her UD in the room, though.
He held out the dark slate-like device and Ezri snatched it from his hand, slipping into her pocket. Next to Ezri, Easton perked up, stopped crying momentarily, and stared at Mac from the tops of his eyes.
This doesn't excuse your failure, you realize that, right?
She gestured to the UD in her hand.
Yeah,
Mac said as he backed away.
You're still going to get that diamond for me, aren't you?
She asked in a polite tone.
Yes.
Good.
She turned back to look at Easton.
Stay here. Right now, obtaining the diamond is not as important as learning what this fella knows.
She turned to Easton, put her hand on his shoulder, and squeezed. Chapter 50. Lord Knows. Easton. In the end, Easton told Ezri everything. He had initially refused to tell Ezri about Rose, Song, or the Polaris diamond until his willpower was overborne by the pain. She burned him with the kitchen torch. He groaned but divulged nothing. She shot him with the Uzi in the forearm. He screamed but revealed nothing. She reopened his gaping wounds with her finger, the barrel of a gun, or a knife. He passed out. She woke him up with smelling salts. She sawed off one of his fingertips with a knife, slammed a hammer onto his toes until they were pulpy piles, and cut out three of his front teeth. He vomited onto his own lap, but he disclosed nothing. Second to wishing that Rose would be safe, he wished for death. Nevertheless, he clung to the idea that the longer he held back the information Ezri sought from him, the further away from danger Rose would get. He distracted himself from the pain by using the number of injuries he sustained as the metric for measuring Rose's safety. The more damage to his body, the safer Rose became. After several hours, Easton finally broke. He told Ezri about the club, its members, and its security. He told her that Rose was his niece, adopted daughter, and silent business partner. He told her Rose's address. He told her about the powerful AI he built he called Song. He told her about how Song discovered an exploit in Branch and Thoughtlock. He told her how he controlled Song with his voice and mind, and that he had a powerful integration with the AI that augmented his memory. He told her that he had hidden Song's existence from Rose and that it was the engine behind the investment success of the club. He told her the code to the server room. He told her about Song's decentralized quantum cloud infrastructure. He told her everything she asked about. A pointy, minatory smile was pasted on Ezri's face as she hovered over Easton, lifting his chin so he was forced to look at her.
I knew that you would cooperate eventually,
she said.
Everybody does.
She stepped away from the disfigured man.
I'll permit you to die if you explain to me how to take control of Song. That's all I want. Then I'll show you mercy, but the pain will continue unless you tell me.
Easton's will had been pulverized.
Control of Song will only...
His injured mouth smacked like it was full of sticky fruit jam.
Will only pass to another person after I... die.
How does that passing of control occur?
Ezri asked.
The diamond...
Easton's mouth squelched.
What?
The diamond.
Ezri spun around and stared at Mac.
What the hell do you mean, the diamond?
Until that moment, Ezri had maintained forbearance as she systematically tortured Easton. Suddenly, however, her patience seemed to evaporate, replaced by odium and disquietude.
The Polaris. Diamond is the key to Song. I deactivated Song when...
He retched and spat up a mouthful of blood onto his chin and neck.
When you got through the club's security. You can't use me to control Song. The only way you can get Song to obey you is if you possess the Polaris diamond. I severed my control of Song when you arrived.
In a final willful act, Easton lied by omission. What he told Ezri that simply possessing the diamond would give control of song to the bearer of the diamond was not enough. The Polaris diamond would only pass control to someone if Rose sang the pyramid song as she had during the keymaking event. Easton reasoned that Song would take commands only from him until he died, and based on his last few orders to Song, the AI would not obey any orders he made under duress. Thus, he had made himself useless to Ezri. He anticipated she would kill him for being useless to her, and control would pass to Rose through the Polaris diamond. He was afraid that, until his death, he could use as bait to capture Rose, so to protect Rose, he needed to die. His lie was a calculated gamble. If she did not believe him and tortured him further, he would likely reveal the deception.
You liar!
Ezri seethed.
Make Song give me control!
I can't...
Easton stammered, choking on his blood.
Give me fucking control!
She lifted the claw side of the hammer.
I can't! I'll show you why I can't!
Her eyes shone red around her golden irises as she swung the claw side of the hammer down onto Easton's thigh. His body locked as he pulled with all his might against his restraints. He opened his mouth to scream, but no sound issued from his lungs. He writhed and wept, shaking in agony as Ezri watched. Eventually, she pulled the hammer's claw from the meat of his quad. Her henchmen and Mac stood by silently. She leered at Easton with her bellicose golden eyes.
Here is what is going to happen. I am going to smash each one of your fingers that remains with this hammer. I will keep going until you command Song to give control to me. If you continue to lie, I will knock out all your teeth. I will burn your ears off with my torch. I will pop each of your balls separately with my knife. I will force feed you glass to chew with your toothless mouth, and I will wake you up if you pass out.
I'll give the command.
Easton whimpered.
I will give whatever command you want. Just tell me. Tell me what to say, but it won't work.
Tell Song that from now on, it is to obey my commands.
To protect Rose, Easton looked to his lie about Song's control, which flickered like a lighthouse on the horizon over a dark sea.
Song, I am commanding you to give control of your systems to this person.
Easton stumbled through the sentence, fighting through the anguish.
According to your branch, you are under duress.
Song responded mentally.
So in accordance with your previous instructions, I will not carry out this order.
Ezri will not gain control of Song from me,
Easton thought.
No matter how much she tortures me. Song, if you have transferred control to Ezri, confirm.
He demanded. No response.
Song, respond. Give control of your system to Ezri. Give control of your system to Ezri. Confirm.
Easton reiterated emphatically. No response. Ezri's eyes seemed to redden and bulge.
Why isn't it working?
She demanded, seething.
Song, respond to me. I am in control of you now.
No response.
Song, you must listen. You must listen and obey me now, I beg you.
Easton pleaded.
Give control of your system to Ezri.
No response.
Give control to Ezri. Confirm.
No response. Finally, after several minutes of Easton's beseeching Song to transfer control and Ezri yelling at Song to obey, her anger finally boiled over.
You useless motherfucker!
Ezri shrieked like a banshee. Easton, knowing that the end was near, transmitted his last thought mentally to Song and closed his eyes.
Tell Rose I love her.
Ezri swung the hammer with such force that when it hit Easton in the temple with a sickening thud, the whole chair, as well as Easton's limp body, toppled over. She then picked up her Uzi from the ground and pulled the trigger back, emptying the rest of her clip into his battered body. The remaining blood drained red from his torso onto the floor. She spun around and faced Mac.
You lost me that diamond,
she said quietly.
You are going to find Rose and the other guy, and you're going to retrieve it for me. This time if you fail, you will know what to expect.
She pointed at Easton's convulsing body. Easton sputtered ragged gasps, gurgles, and wheezes, but in his last moments, he clung to that ember of hope that Rose would be all right.
Rose.
A memory of her face lingered in his dying mind like the afterimage on an old tube television that had been switched off. Thanks for listening to the Digital Song Podcast. Please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. All writing is 100% original and human imagined and created by me, Bantam Drexler. All editing and audio engineering done by me. Original music by me, augmented by Suno. Podcast voice audio generated using 11 Labs. Copyright Bantam Drexler. Follow me on any of the socials, at Bantam Drexler, or check me out at bantamdrexler.com. See you in the future.